To the Sleeper Wire Show. I am your host, Rob Rose, and with me today I have the one, the only dyno mechanic, Greg. Greg, how you doing tonight? Say hello to everybody.
Doing pretty well. Excited to be here talking about landing spots and how they affect other people.
Awesome. And we have a super special guest with us tonight. So this guy isn't just accurate. He is the most accurate from last year in the Fantasy Pros Analyst Rankings. So welcome, Justin Boone. How are you, sir? Good to have you.
I'm great. I appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, it's like one of the most fun times of year right now because we finally know where everybody's going to be. There's no more, where are they going to land? Are they going to be with this team or that team? We finally could take a look at it and start to build our projections and everything for the season. So I love when the draft's over. It's one of my favorite times of the year.
It is like Christmas, and I love when my team's on the clock. I get to watch Baltimore make picks. Now, there were some picks in this draft that had me absolutely blown away. I loved some landing spots, and some landing spots I was less excited about. And I think the number one guy that jumps off the list that is a supreme talent but jumps into an already crowded room is CeeDee Lamb. And we'll get into that stuff later, but that's the number one shocker for me. When he got taken to Dallas, that is going to be a serious air attack now. But so tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for the last 8 seasons to be in the top 10 and to be the, you know, the best last year.
Well, I'll be honest with you. In the 8 seasons that I've done the Fantasy Pros Contest, I've been in the top 10 7 times, and the 8th time I was 11th. I just missed out on the top 10. So little heartbreaking there that I can't say 8 straight top 10s just outside, but that's all right. But I mean, for me, I've been so lucky. You know, coming out of school, I got a job as the staff writer for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which is the CFL team. Anybody that follows the Canadian Football League. And then after that, I was able to get a job covering the NFL and started to get into the fantasy industry a little bit and started working for The Score almost 7 years ago now. And in the last 2 years, was moved into a fantasy only position. I'm fortunate enough that I'm able to work from home full time, which is great. And I could focus on NFL and fantasy all year long, only that. And I don't know, I think that had something to do with me finishing first in Fantasy Pros last year, because that was the first season where throughout the full off season, fantasy had my whole attention all year long, and it was great.
So you're saying if you do the work, the results will come.
It does kind of work that way, yes.
I'm jealous, man.
Does that work in any other facet of life? Because, like, I don't know, I feel like I might be able to apply that to, like, something, just missing it.
I think yeah, you see that with everything. If you're willing to, you know, outwork everybody else and you're given the opportunity to do it, good results tend to come.
No, absolutely, that is 100%. And I am not great at rankings, so I don't put myself out there like that on Fantasy Pros, so that's got to be tough now. So do you think you're going to be able to hold on to your championship here? Are you going for 2 years running?
That's the question, right? A couple years ago, a guy by the name of Sean Kerner, he won it 3 years in a row. So that's sort of the benchmark now that I got to shoot for. But cool. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, for me, during the season, it's just all about football. Like I said, I'm doing it year round now. But during the season, it truly is 24/7. I'm fortunate enough that my wife, my family, my friends, they kind of all understand. I will often cancel plans on Friday and Saturday nights if I don't like where my rankings are at, if I don't think I've put enough time into it. But that's really what it is. It's staying on top of everything. Like, so many casual fantasy players, they don't have the time to do that, and nor should they, right? They shouldn't be devoting that much time to it. That's why they should allow guys like us to do it for them. and we can help give them some of that information. We can dig a little deeper and pull out those nuggets for them to help them make informed fantasy decisions. And that's what I'm doing all year long. I'm staying on top of everything. And it's not just, you know, the normal stuff that you'd look at. It's also paying attention to the offensive lines, who's in, who's out, all the injuries, the defensive matchups, all that kinds of stuff. It all adds up. It gives you little data points. And when you put it all together, that's how I come up with my rankings.
That is awesome. And what's the name of the podcast where people can find you and listen to this? Do you do year-round content for your podcast?
Yeah, for sure we do. Well, they can find all my content at the Score app, and the Score app is completely free. And the podcast is the Score Fantasy Football Podcast. And it's available everywhere. You can search that. And yeah, our draft kit's going to come out near the end of this month. It has all my content in it. And I know there's a lot of people in this industry that do great work, but a lot of them also charge for it. And right now, the Score Fantasy Football Draft Kit, it has been free since I've been there. And that is an unbelievable thing that the Score does for fantasy players out there. And I can't believe that they still give it out for free, but they do. And I'm glad that they do, because it allows us to get to such a big audience as well.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
There are not a lot of people who are willing to put out that much information for no money. So that is awesome for the Score. And thank you for all your hard work that you put into this year round, because it's definitely a lot of people that benefit from the information that you put together and we put together as an industry. So like you said, the casual fantasy player doesn't need to spend every day grinding information. We will do that for them and help condense it into one helpful place here on the Sleeper Wire and with you guys at the Score. So one more question I have for you before we get into the scheduled notes. What was your favorite landing place for a player in this draft?
Well, I mean, I want to go the other way already. I like that you brought up CeeDee Lamb, because there were a couple that made me so upset, and CeeDee Lamb was one of them, but we'll get into all those guys. It has to be Jonathan Taylor, because as much as I like Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift was my top running back in this class, and I saw the flaws in Taylor's game, and I thought that he needed to go to a team like the Colts that was going to have that line in front of him that was going to give him a chance to potentially be the best possible back he can be, because we don't know if he's going to get the opportunity as a receiver, as a pass catcher. It might come, but right now with his skill set, it's just the best pure runner in this class, I would say, behind that Colts offensive line. It's just going to be a thing of beauty.
Now, what do you think that does to Marlon Mack's value? Does that really take it down this year, or do we look to next year to see Jonathan Taylor fully take over that workload?
No, I think that's going to be one where Marlon Mack's value is going to take an immediate hit. They'll still work him in a bit. The strange thing is that Marlon Mack, people will tell you that he's not a good receiver. He's not that bad of a pass catcher, actually. It's just that the Colts don't seem to want to use him. Now, whether that's because they have Nyheim Hines and they want to keep him involved, I don't know. So it's possible that we could see Mack get some of that receiving work if they decide that they want to put him out there in that situation. But I'm very worried about his value. I'm not really that excited for Nyheim Hines. There's some people who have talked him up as maybe the Austin Eckler, because Phillip Rivers has come to town, and I don't see that happening at all. I think Taylor's going to get the bulk of the work there, and Mack falls more into that range. The high-end kind of handcuff guys, the Tony Pollards and the Alexander Madisons, that's where I have him ranked now, and I think it's going to take a Taylor injury for him to have any real value this year in fantasy.
That's gonna go. So I can't disagree with anything you said there, Justin. I want to know where Marlon Mack ends up getting taken this year in drafts. I wonder if the fantasy community is going to value Jonathan Taylor immediately as the starter there. If you draft earlier in the year, you will probably be able to grab Taylor later. And the closer you get to the season, I would assume his ADP is going to start to skyrocket, especially if we can see some actual football prior to that, some training camps, some preseason games. Greg, what was your favorite landing spot from the draft, buddy?
For me to see, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, man, you got to love him in Kansas City. That is the perfect dream landing spot. Everyone's saying, oh, well, the Chiefs drafted a running back. I didn't see it happening because I thought the Chiefs were like, ah, we're good. But they're like, no, we're drafting Clyde. And I'm really excited for it because I always thought he was kind of a Brian Westbrook clone, and I always enjoyed that. So I'm really excited to see him and KC, what he'll do there. He might not completely blow people away this year, like, you know, completely numbers-wise, but I think he'll still do fantastic.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs set the bar pretty high last year for rookie running backs, obviously Saquon Barkley before that. So there's been some serious rookie running backs that have come out in the last couple drafts. Justin, who do you think is going to be the, we'll just say Saquon Barkley, this draft class for fantasy this year?
Oh, yeah, I think you have to look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He could potentially be an RB1 this season. That's how good the landing spot is for him. And we knew coming out, he had that all-round skill set, right? An excellent pass catcher out of the backfield. And now he's just hitching his wagon to Patrick Mahomes and that offense. So looking at him, I think early in the season, he might have a little bit of a timeshare there. They really trust Damian Williams, especially as a pass protector. So early in the season, he might share a little more, but as the season goes on, we've seen it so many times, whether it was Nick Chubb and Carlos Hyde, there's been so many examples. We're going to see Edwards-Helaire come on as the year passes, and it's not going to take very long for that offense to realize what he brings to the table.
No, and he is one hell of a pass-catching back, and I think as long as he picks up NFL Pass Pro immediately, he will be good to go. I'd have to say that my favorite spot was J.K. Dobbins to the Ravens, mm-hmm. not just because I'm a Ravens fan, but probably the best value pick of the draft. And in my opinion, it may not be this year, but he will be the lead back in a run-dominant NFL offense. So while a lot of people are not as high on Dobbins because he fell into a spot with four running backs, I think he will eventually lead that backfield. So I heard a rumor that your favorite movie was something with Adam Sandler, like Little Nicky or some
wild. That seems to be a rumor on your podcast. Yeah, that I'm a fan of Adam Sandler movies. Yeah, I haven't got around to watching too many of them during the quarantine here, though. This would be the opportunity to do it, I guess.
I mean, you know, if you want to watch Adam Sandler, you have to go classic, though. You can't mm-hmm. beat Billy Madison. You can't beat Happy Gilmore. Like, I really liked Adam Sandler for a long time, and then it just got a little and then I stopped liking Adam Sandler for a little bit. His new stuff's all right, but it's still, you know, like Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider and them doing the same jokes. So, you know, hey, whatever. So you're saying that's not your favorite movie?
Sadly, no. The Adam Sandler stuff doesn't really rank anywhere up there. If you're talking about just comedies, though, yeah, Billy Madison is pretty high up the list, I would say.
Yes. Love that movie. But let's move on to our actual scheduled notes here. So, Justin, who else on the Colts is going to take a little bit of a bump here? I know the Colts drafted a wide receiver. What do you expect for T.Y. Hilton? Will he stay healthy this year? And can he thrive with somebody who can actually take the wide receiver workload with him?
Well, I think in general, pretty much all the Colts skill position players are going to get a bump just because Phillip Rivers is coming to town, and that's going to bring some stability at quarterback. Rivers is definitely in the decline phase of his career at this point, but he's going to bring a little more to the table than Jacoby Brissett did last season. So that's great news all around. Hilton, even with Michael Pittman showing up, even with Jonathan Taylor bringing more to the run game there, Hilton, in my mind, still has to be considered in that low-end wide receiver two range, even with more target competition. The guy I'm kind of sad for, though, is Paris Campbell, because a few weeks ago, it was looking like he was going to be the big winner. He was going to be the slot receiver for Phillip Rivers. Now he's got to contend with Michael Pittman, and the team seems very excited about Pittman. I don't know if you've heard, whether it's Chris Ballard or Frank Reich, they're all talking him up. They're really excited to get him. Then they also went out and they signed Trey Burton to play that Eric Ebron role. So when you're looking at Paris Campbell, you were thinking, all right, maybe he gets a little bit of that Eric Ebron work over the middle. He doesn't really have another receiver other than T.Y. Hilton. Now he's got to deal with all these guys. So he's fallen in my rankings from really a potential breakout candidate to somebody I guess I'll stash in the later rounds. I'm definitely not as excited about him. Pittman's pretty intriguing, though. I like him more in Dynasty. I think it's going to be a little tough you know, in his rookie year to come in and, you know, dominate with all these weapons with, like we just mentioned, the Hilton and Campbell and Jack Doyle and Burton. And now with Jonathan Taylor, obviously, in the backfield as well. And, you know, maybe that is, you know, where you want to focus on is the Taylor stuff, like we talked about off the top. But Pittman, to me, seems like a guy that is going to make a big NFL impact. Probably not going to see it until 2021. So I'm not that worried about Hilton's value this year.
Yeah, I've been grabbing Pittman everywhere I can in the second round. That's been a nice value for me. And I do think that with Phillip Rivers there, you're going to see more consistent wide receiver play. As long as T.Y. Hilton can stay healthy, they should be good. What do you think about Melvin Gordon landing in Denver? That really makes a whole cloud around Mile High Stadium that doesn't smell so good. So what do you think that we're going to see here? Because I think Philip Lindsay's proved that he deserves playing time. So what happens to Royce Freeman? And we also have some new wide receivers out there with Jerry Jeudy. So what do you think about the Broncos and how the draft affected them?
Well, as far as the draft goes, I think it's really interesting that so many teams are kind of copying that Chiefs model and going for the speed and really loading up on those kind of weapons, bringing in, you know, they brought in KJ Hamler. It wasn't just Jerry Jeudy coming in. So really, they've upgraded that pass catching core significantly. But this is a team that they want to run the ball, right? Vic Fangio got there. That's what they want to do. They want to run the ball. They want to play defense. My Philip Lindsay shares, I think they're weeping right now. I'm very worried for Philip Lindsay. I do think it's going to be more of a, you know, 1-1A kind of situation with Gordon being the lead. But the team made it pretty clear in the second half last season that they don't see Lindsay as, you know, that high volume pass catching weapon. I don't know why, because I think he showed pretty well in that area, but they did not use him as a pass catcher very much down the stretch last year. So when you're looking at what he's going to get now, if Gordon projects to get a lot of that work, and he profiles as the goal line guy as well, that leaves Lindsay with the less valuable touches, unfortunately. So I have Gordon as a low end RB2, and we've seen him, you know, put up big numbers before. We've seen him put up RB1 type numbers before. So if he does get a little more work, he could even get back up into that range. And Lindsay, unfortunately, now is really an RB3. You know, it would surprise me if Lindsay got up higher than that without a Melvin Gordon injury.
Greg, where would you take Cortland Sutton right now in a startup like redraft league?
That's tough. I would have to say fifth round, maybe fourth round in that frame. I think Jeudy is a different receiver comparatively to Sutton. Sutton's a great field stretcher, big body receiver, where Judy's more a route runner, over the middle receiver. Kind of like I kind of viewed it as what Atlanta did with Julio and Calvin Ridley. Granted. Jeudy is better than Ridley, in my opinion, but we don't know yet, obviously. But I feel like Sutton's not going to be harmed as much as people think.
I think it helps him, actually. It distracts, yes. It distracts the defensive backs. And now that you have KJ Hamler to take the top off the defense, Noah Fant as well, I think there are definitely some great fast targets for Drew Lock to use that that cannon that he's got attached to his body there. So moving on from Denver, I think we're going to Las Vegas now. So viva Las Vegas. it looks like the notes say Darren Waller and Derek Carr. So what do you think is going to happen to the tight end position? And does Derek Carr hear the bell tolling in Las Vegas? Does he need to, do you think he needs to put up huge numbers this season to continue being the quarterback for John Gruden after this?
Yeah, they live right next to each other, though, right? So it's going to be really awkward if he does bench him at any point. But it seems like there's a good chance that could happen. As much as Mariota, you know, lost his job last year to Ryan Tannehill, we could see the exact same situation happen with Mariota on the other side of things. As far as Waller goes, I'm not really moving him that much. I know, you know, bringing in Henry Ruggs, bringing in some other weapons, even a guy like Jason Witten. I'm not really sure why they brought in Jason Witten unless they just wanted him to be, you know, kind of a face in Las Vegas that they could put out at events and stuff like that, because I'm not really sure what he's going to bring to the table for them when you already have Darren Waller. You already have Foster Moreau, and Foster Moreau had 5 touchdowns last year. He looked pretty good before he got hurt. Maybe the injury is worse than we know, and that's why they brought Witten in. But I don't think that it's going to affect Waller that much, because Ruggs is going to step into really that Tyrell Williams role. And then you have Jason Witten maybe taking on Foster Moreau's spot until Moreau is completely healthy. So I think, you know, Jason Witten's probably going to put up a stat line maybe similar to Moreau's last year, which was like under 200 yards, but he had like 5 touchdowns, right? And then looking at the rest of the offense, I mean, Carr, he's not the kind of receiver. And this offense really isn't built to be a high volume passing attack. They want to build it around the run. And it's strange that it seems like we're talking about so many teams that are doing that. But that offense, you mentioned Josh Jacobs earlier, that's who they're going to build this offense around. Now you have Ruggs to be that speedy weapon for them. And he's more than just a field stretcher, for sure. I think he could be a Tyreek Hill type guy, but I don't think he's going to be that coming out of the gate. So this season, I don't think he's going to help the passing game to the extent that maybe Carr needs him to in order to save his job. So if there's any sort of issues in that passing game along the way, yeah, I'm very worried about Carr. And really, in fantasy, there's no reason to invest in a guy like Carr outside of, you know, 2 quarterback leagues. But Mariota is somebody that I think you should be trying to stash, especially in dynasty leagues. I think he's out in the waiver wire on right now, and the waivers are going to come up at some point this week in one of my leagues, and I'm going to try to go get him.
Now, I am scared for my life for anybody in Las Vegas if Marcus Mariota takes over the quarterback position. I don't know why I'd be scared for my life, but that would just be a terrible ordeal for everybody there. I have no faith in Marcus Mariota. I don't think he's a good quarterback. I don't think the system failed him in Tennessee. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't think that he's the guy that John Gruden, you know, that solves the puddle for Gruden. But I do think, you know, there are some interesting options in the 2021 draft. If they want to move up and get a quarterback, we know John Gruden, Mike Mayock, team together are scheming up one hell of a team. They're actually they're quietly putting together a very good young team out there in Las Vegas, and now they have Sin City as their home base, and they are going to try to, like you said, put out a great product for their fans and everybody who stops in Vegas to bet on games and just happen to see a, you know, passing by, like, oh, I'll go see a football game in Las Vegas. It's quite a market. So moving from Vegas to Atlanta instead of LA to Atlanta, Todd Gurley. Greg, I'm going to throw it to you first. Where are you taking Todd Gurley now that he is the RB1 on the Atlanta Falcons?
That's tough. I'd probably in a 6th or 7th round, I'd say, in redraft. He doesn't have much competition there. They like him. Obviously, they signed him. So that's where I'd take him.
I think he has to go off the board earlier than that, just based on the volume he's going to get. I thought that they were going to draft a running back. I'm really surprised that they didn't, actually. And the fact that they didn't means who's behind him, right? Like Brian Hill,
Ito Smith.
Yeah, Kadri Olson, Ito Smith. None of those guys are going to infringe on Gurley. And last year, even though Gurley didn't look as good, he got by just based on the volume, based on the scoring opportunities. They kind of dialed back his passing down work as well, but he still scored something like 14 touchdowns or 12 touchdowns last season. I don't remember the exact number, but then continued to get that volume. Atlanta looks like they want to give him the same kind of thing, and we know that offense can score all the weapons that they have in the passing game. So for me, it's not that I think Gurley is the same player that he used to be. I think at this point, everybody has to realize that he's not an RB1 anymore in fantasy. But he's a pretty solid RB2 just based on the volume that he's projected for.
No, for sure. I guess I'm still stuck in the dynasty mindset. I don't play much redraft anymore, so it's hard for me to separate
in dynasty, in dynasty, you should have already, if you haven't already made the move to try to get rid of him. But if there's any excitement around the Falcons thing, you got to try to get rid of him now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking, 6 or 7. If you're trying to win now, round 6 or 7 is not a bad spot to pick him up at. But redraft is hard for me to calculate as much. I'll pay attention to it.
Yeah, it definitely is a different ball game. And it was amazing. We did a trade value game, Justin, where we looked at trade values in super flex and one quarterback leagues when we did the quarterbacks. And every quarterback was about three times more valuable according to a trade calculator, which is, you know, be it what it may, but I was really blown away that they were three times more valuable in a super flex league. So where I think I'm going to take Todd Gurley probably in the third or fourth round, depending on what my team looks like. If it's redraft, I don't think Todd Gurley is a bad option for you to pick up as your RB2, like you said, Justin. Now, who on the Falcons benefits from the arrival of an actual running game? Because Devontae Freeman has been an absolute travesty recently, last couple of years, due to injuries. And I don't like his running style. He drops his head every time he initiates contact, and they're eventually going to start calling that penalty on him. Who do you think is a big mover and shaker here? Does this help anybody in particular? And what do you think of Hayden Hurst as the starting tight end for the Falcons?
I don't think that it really is going to make a huge impact for anybody on the offense. Who it's really going to help is the Falcons defense, because they have just been getting torched the last couple of seasons. And what could happen is if Gurley can help establish that run game a little more and the defense can play a little better, we might not see Matt Ryan put up as big stats, because really what they've been doing is just been in comeback mode for the better part of a year, year and a half. They've just been trying to throw to catch up. That's why guys like Austin Hooper have seen such high volume. So I really like Hayden Hurst there. But why I like Hayden Hurst is because they didn't address that third receiver spot. They had an opportunity. They could have been the team that drafted CeeDee Lamb and brought him in and had him playing the slot for them. They decided not to. So that keeps Hayden Hurst in a situation where even if he gets 75% of what Austin Hooper got last year, that still puts him on pace to be in the top 12 for targets at tight end. Like, that's just how much volume Austin Hooper had last year. So I like Hayden Hurst as potentially a breakout candidate at tight end this year. I think he's going to sneak his way into the low end tight end one ranks. But I don't know that Gurley's really going to have that big of an impact on any of the other skill position players in that offense.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I was happy to see Hayden Hurst get an opportunity to be a tight end one on a team. The Ravens took him in the first round, and Mark Andrews shone far above with Hayden Hurst experiencing that foot injury going in. He had the surgery and had it played in his foot for that year. So last year was his first year healthy, and I thought he looked good. I thought if he had the opportunity to be a tight end one, and he gets that in Atlanta. So hopefully that works out well, and you can get him late in drafts. I don't think that is going to be a move that made anybody except for diehard football fans excited. So I like it. Greg's beard likes it. And we're going to go from Atlanta to New England and Jarrett Stidham. So he's somebody that's sitting on a bench in a lot of my dynasty teams, because there were rumors last year that Stidham could be the guy. And I am very happy to have him now, because he is the starting quarterback in New England as of this moment. Do you think that will continue, or do you think somebody else comes in for that job?
No, right now, and if you look at the betting odds, right now he's the favorite to be the starter, and he's a pretty significant favorite to be the starter, and I'm right there with you in Dynasty Leagues. I grabbed him everywhere I could last year, threw him on my bench, and he might even have to save me in one league where Jameis Winston lost a starting role, and now Stidham might have to be the guy for me as my second quarterback in that league. But this situation, it's just going to be so interesting to see what he can do for fantasy, because it would be irresponsible for me to rank him in my top 20 or something like that. But at quarterback, there are so many solid options for fantasy that it's hard to move a guy like Stidham up that far. But in my opinion, people are really sleeping on him. And there's a few reasons. So one is just the perception of it, right? Everybody's looking at the void that gets left by Brady, and they're thinking nobody can fill those shoes. It's Brady. It's the GOAT, all that sort of stuff. Even fantasy, Brady was a fringe quarterback one last year, so we'll give him that. But the Patriots aren't going to ask Stidham to be Tom Brady. They're way too smart for that, right? It's a team that builds around the players' talents that they have. They game plan every single week. They try to attack the opponent's weaknesses. They're so smart about everything they do. They're going to find ways to make Stidham successful. just like they did when Brady was young, right? That's what they did to get Brady to the point that he's at. They figured out what worked for him. They deployed him that way. They played to his strengths. They did the same when Matt Castle had to step in. They did the same when Jimmy Garoppolo had to step in. When Jacoby Brissett played a game or two that one year, they're always able to find a way. It's Belichick. It's Josh McDaniels. These guys are just so good at what they do. And then you have to look at Stidham. He fared pretty well in the preseason last year. And, you know, the big thing in my mind that I think people are overlooking for him when it comes to fantasy is he can run. Tom Brady was not able to run the ball. Stidham is sneaky. He's not a dual threat quarterback, anything like that. But when you look at somebody like Daniel Jones kind of inflates his value a little bit with the scrambling ability, right? If you look at Daniel Jones' stats last year, he was on pace for like 360 rushing yards, something like that. I don't know if Stidham will get to that mark, but if he can add 200, 250 yards, that really boosts his value. When you look at the top 10 fantasy quarterbacks last season, almost all of them at this point are able to put up rushing stats at least to that range. You don't see a lot of the guys like Drew Brees crack that, you know, top 10, top 12 anymore. And part of the reason is because of that. And then when you look at the weapons in New England, everybody wants to be so down on it. Yes, they don't have Gronk. They don't have a Randy Moss anymore. But the weapons aren't that bad. They have Julian Edelman still, very reliable, as long as he doesn't demand a trade to try to go join Brady in Tampa. And N'Keal Harry, going to go into his second year. He's continuing to develop. It's a guy who, you know, they had big plans for. They think that he can obviously give them quite a bit. They got two new rookies at tight end. Last year, they had absolutely nothing at tight end. So maybe they can get something from those guys. You have some vets on the roster, Mohamed Sanu, Marquise Lee. Jacoby Myers looked all right last year. One of those guys is going to fill out the three wide sets. James White, one of the best pass catching specialists out of the backfield. There's just, I think there's way more upside. And I'm going to have to write an article about this at some point soon, because there's so many situations that a negative perception really impacts players' value. And I think this is one of them, where everyone's just looking at New England and overall they're down on them because they don't have the GOAT in the center of that offense anymore. But Stidham has a lot of potential for fantasy as a sleeper kind of pick. I'm not saying he's going to come up and put QB1 numbers up, but he could be a pretty good sleeper at quarterback this season.
He's somebody that I absolutely want to see be successful, except I don't, because I don't want the Patriots to start another dynasty run, because I'm tired of that video game. We've played that enough. We should play something else now. Now, going from New England to Arizona. Now, this one was something that was world-shocking when it happened, but we all remember Bill O'Brien shit the bed and traded DeAndre Hopkins to the Arizona Cardinals. So, Greg, I'm going to ask you first, buddy. What does this do to Christian Kirk?
Redraft, it puts his value in the toilet, in my opinion. You got Nuke. You got Larry Fitzgerald, who's still there. Who else you got? Oh, yeah, Kenyon Drake. Okay, great. But beyond that, okay, it's not great for this year. Larry Fitzgerald retires. I see Kirk bouncing back. So Dynasty, hold. Don't sell. Right now is not the time to sell him. Right now is to hold him tight to your chest and not let go.
Justin, what do you think is going to happen with Christian Kirk?
Well, it's really tough, because we were projecting him to have so much volume before Hopkins got there, obviously. Now with the new target hog there, he's not going to get that. But this is still an offense that I want to buy pieces of. I want to be a part of what's going on with the Cardinals. So, yeah, in Dynasty, I'm more apt to go out and get him and try to see if we can get something from him. This season, though, he's still in my rankings. He's still in that range of, you know, wide receiver 3. And there is some upside. If Kyler Murray takes the next step and that offense keeps going, and maybe having the attention taken away from him and put on a guy like Hopkins, who we know can deal with it, it could potentially help Kirk. But for sure, it's a negative. There's no denying that this is a negative, that he's not going to be the guy who's going to get all the volume in that offense at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely going to cut his target share and the amount of targets that he'll see, but at the same time, it'll probably be more quality targets when he gets them, because they will be paying attention to DeAndre Hopkins. So I think that Kyler Murray is probably one of the better year two breakout candidates. I think Daniel Jones is going to do better than he did last year. That being said, I still don't think the Giants are going to be anything better than mediocre. And I think the Cardinals actually have a chance to maybe that now that they've had a year to work in that offense. And obviously this kind of is going to depend on whether or not they're able to get together and have real organized team activities. I think this offense needs repetitions to be able to execute flawlessly. And I think there's some things that some plays that could have happened last year had they executed flawlessly, and they didn't. They were sloppy. People weren't ready. And right now, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't their tight end room look something like Max Williams and some other disregarded tight end too?
Yeah, there's been some talk that Dan Arnold could be kind of a sleeper in that offense, but do we really think that offense is going to use the tight end? It doesn't seem like it. And when you're bringing in a guy like Hopkins and, you know, you have Kenyon Drake coming in there in the second half last season, I don't know that they're all of a sudden going to want to put the ball in the hands of some tight ends that are very unproven.
And who did they draft? The other wide receiver they drafted last year?
Hakeem Butler and yep. Andy Isabella.
There we go. So do you think either of those guys are in for a year two surge with Kyler Murray?
Everybody seems to have written off Hakeem Butler, which seems strange because he got hurt last season. It wasn't like he had a really bad year. And I saw him get dropped in one of my leagues, which seems shocking because I'm almost positive that he went in the late first round last year. So it's pretty early to give up on a guy, but I don't think that either are really going to step up there. I think with Larry Fitzgerald still taking a little bit of work, not really a fantasy option at this point, but a guy that's going to eat up some targets, and with Christian Kirk being the one who's probably in a better position to step up as the second best pass catching option, I don't know that we're going to see Andy Isabella or Hakeem Butler. And it seems like everyone's just forgotten about Hakeem Butler. I don't really know why. You know, last year in one of my dynasty leagues, I'm pretty sure he was like a late first round pick. And then this year, I've seen him get dropped on the waiver wire in that league. So it's a really bizarre situation. But I don't think that either of these guys are going to have a shot to really put up big numbers. They might have some, you know, inconsistent games where they kind of pop up. We saw Isabella even do that last year. We had a couple big catches. But when you have Larry Fitzgerald still there, not really a fantasy option, but a guy that's going to eat up some volume. And then you have Christian Kirk, fairly established in that second role behind Hopkins, it's going to be tough for either of those other guys to step up.
Yeah, there's not really a spot for them to get onto the field right now. So playing time, I think Hakeem Butler stands the best chance because he's a big body guy. Isabella is definitely the gadget man in that offense. 4-3-1 is fast. That is very fast. So I think you're right on about that, though. I mean, obviously, you know, you are the most accurate of 2019, Justin. So even amongst all our technical issues tonight, that still shines through. So I'll listen to you on that. Let's move on to the next city. We're going to Buffalo. So the Bills made some moves in the offseason. Josh Allen must be a happy man. He now has a new wide receiver one who is very similar to his old wide receiver one, just a little taller. He got Steph Diggs. So what do you think happens with the wide receiver position group? Zay Jones is gone now. He's in Las Vegas. So you've got essentially John Smokey Brown. You've got, Steph Diggs. And I think Robert Foster's still there.
And Cole Beasley.
Cole Beasley, the slot champion of last year. Fantastic. I still prefer Jamison Crowder if we're talking slot receivers of that profile. But another guy I don't want to forget about with the Bills, though, is Dawson Knox. I love him as a tight end breakout candidate for this year. Justin, go ahead and shoot me down on that. How do you feel about the Bills offense now post offseason moves?
Well, I got to qualify it first by saying I am a Bills fan, so maybe this is the one area where my analysis isn't as good as maybe some other teams, but Josh Allen really won me over in the rookie season. I'll be honest, I was one of his doubters when he was coming out, when the Bills drafted him. I was not that excited. I didn't know what he was going to become in the NFL. But in that first season, he showed what a leader he can be. He showed what kind of player he is. And no, he's never going to be an elite quarterback. That's not what they drafted. But I really love what the Bills coaching staff has done, what that front office has done. They've built such a great culture there. And maybe for the first time since I was a kid, I'm really happy to be a Bills fan. I really like the moves they make. You mentioned earlier, you know, the Ravens making some very smart moves in the draft. Well, the Bills have started to finally do that. So it's nice to see. And what they've done is they've insulated Josh Allen. They gave him a good defense. They've brought in these pieces around him each year. They keep bringing in more. I love the way that they kind of rebuilt that offensive line on the fly. Brought in a bunch of low-cost veterans, one big-ticket guy in Mitch Morse, but they found some of these Quentin Spain and some of these guys that came in and played big roles, and they kind of gelled together, and now that offensive line isn't the problem area that it was before. What an interesting way to kind of fix that, and maybe we'll see more teams try to attempt to do something like that. And now when you're talking about, you know, what could Josh Allen be, the Bills decide – they don't want to wait on one of these rookie receivers. They don't want to see if they can get a CD Lamb in the first round. Maybe he takes a year to develop. They need to know right away, can Josh Allen be the guy to get us to the next level? So they trade that first round pick. They go out and get Stephon Diggs. I'm worried that Stephon Diggs' issues in Minnesota are going to carry over to Buffalo because he was unhappy that he wasn't getting enough volume in Minnesota. The Bills offense might not be the offense to go to as far as, you know, a heavy pass game where he thinks that he can get the targets that a number one receiver, an elite receiver would get. Hopefully he'll stay happy there. But you have Allen now last year showing he can be a top 10 fantasy quarterback. He has that rushing ability. It's been able to push him over the top. 9 touchdowns last year. I believe he had 8 touchdowns on the ground the year before that. So fantasy wise, with all these weapons there, there's nothing stopping him from being a top 5 guy in fantasy. It hurts John Brown's value that Stephon Diggs is there. It bumps him down now into probably closer to that wide receiver 4 range, which is unfortunate for him. Dawson Knox, once again, we're talking about the passing attempts in that offense. I don't know that Dawson Knox is going to get enough work there to be a fantasy starter, but he's on the list of those late round tight ends that you could be looking at. But overall, what you want to do is you want to try to own Josh Allen so you can get a piece of all of these guys.
Yeah, that's well said. And I love Josh Allen. I love watching him play. He may not be super accurate, but he puts on a show out there. And it reminds me a lot of Cam Newton back when he first came into the league. He's a huge man that's mobile and can run you over. And he's got a hell of an arm. If he can get real in his mechanics and get more accurate, I think he could be a perennial top 5 guy because he does have all the rushing ability. It's a different style of rushing to what Lamar Jackson is doing out there, but it is just as effective. And you are right, though. That's not going to be a high-volume passing offense. So, Greg, I'm going to throw this question to you. Who's the running back to own in Buffalo? Will it be Devin Singletary, or will it be Zach Moss?
Asking me all the hard questions tonight, Rob. I love it. Yes. I think it's going to be Singletary. I think he's in PPR. Standard Moss. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think Singletary showed enough last year. He's dynamic enough. But it's definitely a committee. I think Moss will probably get more touchdowns. So I think that in PPR, the answer is Singletary.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I've really loved Devin Singletary. And I was really hoping they were not going to basically bring in another Frank Gore. Justin, do you think Singletary can still break the RB2 stratosphere here?
I really do. I really do. Because we've seen Brandon Bean actually talked about this, what the role is going to be for a guy like Zach Moss coming in. Everyone's kind of worried that Zach Moss is going to take on such a big role in that offense. But Brandon Bean outlined that they see Moss as that early down grinder. So you have them now in really the same situation as last year where Moss is going to get, you know, maybe 100, max 150 touches, I would say. And that still allows Singletary to put up pretty big stats. Last year, he was on pace for over 200 carries, for over 1,000 yards, and he was getting receiving production, would have been on pace for about 39 receptions, over 250 receiving yards and 6 touchdowns is what he would have put up. And that was with Frank Gore there. And that was with Josh Allen stealing that goal line work. So he could have been the RB14 if those numbers were able to get put up over the full 16-game schedule. So it's surprising to me that everyone wants to be out on Singletary at this point, because we talked earlier about Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay. Who's going to get the most valuable touches in this offense? The receiving work is so important, and that is going to be all Singletary's in this offense on top of the work that he got last year. So I really still like him in that spot. Having Moss there maybe bumps him down a couple spots, but he's still in that RB2 mix for sure.
So let's take the plane from Buffalo to a disaster area in Houston, but we're going to do this differently. So, Justin, I want you to make me feel optimistic about the Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans and somebody on that team that can be fantasy viable this season in redraft.
Oh, I mean, so many guys on that team that could be fantasy viable. Anyone attached to Deshaun Watson could be fantasy viable. You talked about it with Josh Allen a little earlier, saying he's such a fun player to watch. He's so exciting to watch. I think that's something that's lost in fantasy so often. This is supposed to be fun. You want to have guys on your team that are exciting to watch. And a couple of years ago, I went hard explaining to everyone that Deshaun Watson was that guy. He is the Superman out in the field. You know, Cam Newton had that moniker for a while. Deshaun Watson is that guy now. I have complete faith that he can lift this offense no matter who is out there with him. So they've gone out. They got Brandon Cooks. They signed Randall Cobb. They got David Johnson, that I know everyone is down on DJ, but for the first 6 weeks before he got hurt last year, he was right up there with the top fantasy back. So it's not like just because there was one clip where he looked very slow after getting hurt later in the season, and everyone's looking at that saying he looks like he's a dad runner now, basically. I don't think that's the case. I think when he's in this offense with Deshaun Watson, if we saw Carlos Hyde put up 1,000 yards on the ground and not do much as a receiver at all because he can't, David Johnson's going to come in there. He's going to be able to produce, and he's going to have some receiving work on top of that. So I like David Johnson as an RB2. I still like Deshaun Watson, now more of that mid-range QB1, but he still has top 5 upside. It's not like the whole rug's pulled out from under him with Hopkins gone. I'm not particularly excited about Randall Cobb there, but between Will Fuller and Brandon Cooks, one of those guys is going to produce. If Will Fuller stays healthy, he's going to be a top 20 receiver in my mind in that offense. But the problem is he's not going to stay healthy, obviously. So yeah, maybe you want to put your chip on Brandon Cooks then, I guess.
And I have my injury concerns with him. So I love Brandon Cooks as a player. He's gotten traded for a first round pick 3 different times, but the concussion issue is a different kind of injury, because he's a speedy receiver and he's going to be in high velocity impact crashes here on a football field. Having a consistent concussion issue is a recipe for disaster. And last year we kind of jokingly said, hey man, maybe this is time to hang up the cleats. But in seeing, you know, the kind of impact that multiple concussions and severe concussions can have on an athlete or a person in general, man. But if I'm going to hang my, hat on anybody in that offense, on the receiver side, is Kenny still there? Did he stay?
Yeah, he's still there
for now.
Okay. I honestly would say I would like Kenny Stills more than anybody else in the wide receiver room there, mainly because he will actually be on the field with Deshaun Watson more often than not. Will Fuller, it just seems impossible. And I don't know if he just, he doesn't have the body for it. If his soft tissue just doesn't want to hang in with the wear and tear of an NFL season.
But Rob, what about Kiki?
Yeah, what the F happened to Kiki? Where is that guy? Yeah, no, but I mean, like, yeah, there was no answer, because where is that guy, though? What happened to Kiki QT?
I think there were some rumblings that maybe there was issues. The coaching staff kind of put him in the doghouse there. I'm not really sure why. And now with all the stuff that we've heard about Bill O'Brien, we don't know what's true and what's not, but it definitely seems like there's a disconnect between him and some of his players. So perhaps that was also involved with the Kiki Kuti situation. I don't know, but it would be tough for me to invest in him in Stills, who you just mentioned. Really, I think the upside is with those other guys, and you just kind of have to take your shot. I don't know that, you know, I want to put, faith in a guy like Stills, who's going to need someone to go down in front of him before he's going to put up big numbers. And even then, he had those kind of opportunities in the past with the Texans, and he didn't put up huge stats when Will Fuller went down before.
No, he didn't. And I think he had one game that he looked good. And then beyond that, it was a crapshoot. And hopefully we can see some people stay healthy there in Houston. But let's stay on the optimism train here and jump to our next city, and that's Chicago. So, Justin, make me feel good about Mitchell Trubisky.
How dare you do that to me? How dare you try to make me talk up Mitch Trubisky? Come on. No, thank you. I don't know that we even need to talk about Trubisky at this point, do we? Like, I have so little confidence in him.
They just declined his fifth-year option. They're not keeping him.
Yeah. I mean, Nick Foles is going to start there, whether it's a few games into the season or whether it's in week one, and he's going to be able to give them that steady play. I think Nick Foles gets overrated quite a bit, but he can be that leader on the team. He can be a more stabilizing force than what Trubisky's done there. And they have a good set of skill position players. The Bears totally do. I'm not going to spend draft capital on Trubisky on a quarterback who he's just failed to show any improvement. And I thought he was rushing a little bit a couple years ago. Once he got his shoulder hurt, he really stopped doing that whatsoever. So he's going to be on an extremely short leash. And if we get a training camp, I think there's a good shot that he's going to lose out in training camp, and we're going to see Foles starting in week one. If you want to get excited about guys, though, it's not going to be Trubisky. It's going to be Allen Robinson, who's a wide receiver one. It's going to be Anthony Miller, who I think is going to break out this season, who really came on in the second half last year. It's going to be those guys. It's also not going to be Jimmy Graham or any of the 10 tight ends on their roster. I have no idea why they've gone that route, but you're going to want to invest in those receivers. Those are the guys that I want in that offense, and Robinson and Anthony Miller.
But Justin, they cut, Burton, so they had to fill the void.
Sorry, nine tight ends now, right?
That's right.
Anthony Miller is somebody that I have had my eye on since they drafted him. And last year I went out on a limb and said, I think Anthony Miller will usurp the wide receiver one role from Allen Robinson. Fail. Big fail. But I do love Anthony Miller's talent, and I still think that he's going to continue to move. I think if Foles takes over that job, you can look at him being able to carry multiple wide receivers in fantasy. You could see possibly, I don't want to say there'd be two wide receiver ones on that offense, but you could see a legitimate wide receiver one and wide receiver two in fantasy. Now, are you buying or selling David Montgomery?
I liked him coming out, but I didn't see what I wanted to see from him. They've talked about giving him a full three down role there. I don't know if that's ever going to happen. So even if the offense improves a little bit with Foles, Montgomery's not a guy that I'm going to want to jump on. And I recently wrote our breakouts article, and it's a strange year for breakouts because there's not a lot of running backs that fit the criteria. I don't normally put rookies in there. So then you're looking at guys like Miles Sanders, who I think has already proven himself. He was an RB1 down the stretch last season. I don't think there's any doubt there. Singletary, who I actually did put in the article. And then it's like Darius Geis or Montgomery, like, Drake kind of in that Sanders role where he was an RB1 down the stretch last year. Sure. So I felt like those guys were maybe a little too obvious. So yeah, it was between like David Montgomery and Darius Geis, and I didn't want to put either of those guys in. So I actually went with Raheem Mostert, who also really put up big numbers, but that was kind of into the playoffs, so I let it go.
Yeah. I like the way you think.
Yeah, definitely. Now, let's go ahead. You kind of jumped on Miles Sanders already, so let's take the plane out of Chicago and let's move to Philadelphia, city I love, and let's talk about Miles Sanders a little bit more. He showed that he can be an RB1, but is Doug Peterson going to give him bell cow RB1 work, or is he still going to be in a committee approach over there in Philadelphia?
Well, there's not that many bell cows out there, right? Like if you talk about guys like CMC or Saquon Barkley, there's just not that many out there anymore. So I don't know that he really needs to get that. And if you want me to answer it straight up, no, I don't think he's going to get bell cow work in that offense. But he didn't really get it last year either. We saw Boston Scott come in and, you know, get involved in the passing game. But he could still, Sanders can still put up top 10, top 12 numbers, which, like I said, is what he did down the stretch last season. The worry might be that they bring in someone like a Carlos Hyde to kind of spell him a little bit. You know, we saw last year with Jordan Howard there, it really limited Sanders' value early in the season. And it wasn't until Howard went down and got out of the way when Sanders finally exploded. So I like that he's involved in the passing game. I really like how they used him down the stretch. And I think this offense as a whole is just going to be so much better this season. You're going to see healthy receivers, whoever they are. There's going to be healthier receivers on that offense this year, whether it's the rookies, whether it's the vets last year that all went down. And I really like Carson Wentz. And it's an offense that we know this offense could put up points, and that's going to give Sanders scoring opportunities. So count him in my top 10 this season. I really like Sanders this year.
So this is another team that made a stacked positional draft choice. So Jalen Hurts is a Philadelphia Eagle. You just said you love Carson Wentz. So the Eagles made some interesting choices, and I want to ask you about two of them. One is Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson. Would you have done the same thing?
I would not have, no. I understand why they did it. They really wanted speed. It was pretty clear by all their offseason additions at receiver that they were looking for speed on that offense. You know, DeSean Jackson is going to come back, I would think, this season, and he should be healthy this year, but maybe they're worried he's not going to be able to stay that way for very long at his age. But they wanted speed. That's why they did what they did. But Justin Jefferson is going to be the better pro receiver.
I completely agree with that. And I am taking Justin Jefferson ahead of Jalen Reagor in all dynasty rookie drafts when that choice comes to me. I do like Jalen Rager's opportunity this year, though, if DeSean Jackson is not 100% the whole season. He definitely profiles to be a similar style back, wide receiver. But the one thing that you're going to have to anticipate with that is some boom bust. So big splash receivers may give you 3 touchdowns in a week and the next week give you 15 yards and a whole lot of crap. So I like Philly's offense moving forward, but what do you think about Jalen Hurts and them having 2 of the top 10 quarterbacks? Now, is that just Doug Peterson or Howie Roseman, whoever was quoted saying something similar to that? Like, what is that, coach talk, or are we actually going to see Jalen Hurts in this offense?
No, that's coach talk. It's not going to happen. I mean, they just signed Wentz to a big deal. He's a good player. I don't get why everyone was so quick to say, oh, okay, they spent the high pick on him. He's clearly going to be coming in. He's a threat to Carson Wentz. There's some worry from an injury standpoint, but I think what we're seeing across the league, we saw it with the Andy Dalton signing as well. Teams are realizing, contending teams are realizing, they need a solid backup. They need a guy to come in who could take over that offense, who could help them get some wins if their starter goes down. I'm not at all worried, though, that Hurts is going to take this job from Wentz, barring some sort of catastrophic injury. But I am interested. You mentioned like the offense as a whole and talking about like some of the other weapons that they have there. And I think this factors into the Carson Wentz thing. They wanted to get all these weapons that I just mentioned, all these speedy guys, to help Carson Wentz. It's not to help Jalen Hurts. If Jalen Hurts gets under center, he needs an offense built around him. Similar, you can call him maybe like a poor man's Lamar Jackson. He is not nearly as accomplished as a passer as Lamar Jackson is entering the league. And he is more of a runner. He's not as athletic or as dynamic of a runner, but in college, he relied on his rushing skills even more than Lamar Jackson did to kind of get him to the pros. So when you look at this offense and all the weapons that they have, the one question I have, maybe you could answer it for me, is what's going to happen with Alshon Jeffrey? Because I don't really understand. There's been so much negative talk about him. That's going to have a big impact on Carson Wentz's value, obviously. But people looking at Alshon Jeffrey, I have him way down my rankings. The guy hasn't had a 1,000-yard season since 2014, I think, with the Bears. It's been a really, really long time. And then there were all those rumors that he was the one talking to reporters who said some negative things about the team and about Wentz potentially. I don't know if that was ever proven to be true or not, but is he going to even be on the team in week one?
In my opinion, yes. And only because they don't have anybody else who profiles as that X receiver. You can't put Arthega Whiteside out there. From what I understand, they weren't necessarily happy with his development. He looked like he was completely overwhelmed on the field. So if you want to put a big body guy out there who can play above the rim, which is that style that they like to play, I think you have to put him out there. But if there is dissension in the ranks, I know that Roseman will stand behind his head coach. And if Doug Peterson wants to get him out of there, they do that. But what can you trade Alshon Jeffrey for? He hasn't been healthy the last couple years. Like you said, he hadn't put up a 1,000-yard season since Chicago. And the first year in Philly, he looked great, but he was making exceptional plays. And you cannot expect somebody to make exceptional plays for touchdowns season after season. Sometimes you just don't catch the ball. That is something that happens out there. And when you're constantly trying to make jump ball catches, 50-50 balls against pro DBs, you're not always going to come down with it. It's just not possible.
I mean, short of Jeffrey not being on the team, I don't really see Jalen Reagor's path to consistent fantasy production. You kind of touched on it. It puts him in more of a position than where he has to be, you know, that inconsistent guy that pops up week to week. You know, the odd time, it's really tough to kind of spot where he's going to have those blow up games for DFS and whatnot.
So continuing with quarterbacks, we're getting kind of towards the end of the list here. There's a few names that people had wondered about. One of them landed somewhere, and to my knowledge, the other one is still unsigned. So Jameis Winston goes to New Orleans. Now, I absolutely think that Sean Payton said, I want a starting caliber quarterback as the backup. So does this tell you that Taysom Hill is not the guy that's going to take over after Drew Brees is gone?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that even before they signed Jameis Winston, to be honest. I mean,
same.
Yeah, Taysom Hill, he's an interesting player. He's extremely versatile, but he's not a long-term option at quarterback in the NFL. The guy's 30 years old. He's barely played quarterback in the NFL at this point. So I think them talking him up in that way, I don't know if it was a negotiating tactic to try to get somebody like Winston in as cheap as they did or what, but I would be stunning to see Taysom Hill get a starting job in the NFL for, you know, anything more than a short stretch filling in for an injury or something like that. And now they don't need him to do that because they have Jameis Winston, and it's such a nice spot for Jameis Winston owners who, you know, and I count myself among them in Dynasty, were very disappointed when he didn't get a starting job. But if you're going to talk about his value moving forward, what better spot to go than to New Orleans, where, you know, maybe I think there's a good shot that Drew Brees is going to retire after this year. We know Sean Payton kind of let it slip at one point in an interview where he said, you know, he's coming back for one more year. And then he kind of walked it back at one point and tried to act like that wasn't what he said. But it wouldn't be surprising to see Brees retire after this season. And that would put Winston in a great position in that offense that we saw a guy like Teddy Bridgewater, who's fairly limited as a quarterback, put up low-end QB1 numbers. So Jameis Winston, if he can bring it all together with that coaching, with that offense and that infrastructure around him, it could be a great, great fantasy quarterback after this season.
Yeah, if Sean Payton can't reel you in, then I'm not sure really there's anybody out there that's going to be able to get you moving in the right direction. My big problem with Jameis Winston is decision-making.
Yeah.
He makes bad decisions everywhere, on the field, off the field. I mean, I would not be surprised if he falls out of bed on a regular occasion because he made the decision to put, you know, his face down first instead of his feet.
I think personally, I think people forget that this is still the NFL and people gotta play right and play well. And Jameis Winston did not. I think there was another stat out there. He could have thrown another 20 picks or something like that, or another 20 passes or something along those lines where he could have been picked off. And I think people forget that when it comes to fantasy football, that he's still a football player. Did he score a crap ton of fantasy points? Yeah, and that's what we care about. But comes in the day, he's still got to keep his job and be productive. And I think you're right, Rob. It's like, can he make better decisions, not steal crab legs from Publix and things of that nature?
Yeah, there's a lot of problems that I had. And all joking aside, I honestly think that's the hole in his game. I don't think it was the LASIK surgery. That's not going to fix that. So, you know. Now, the next guy, Justin, is Cam Newton. Where's he going to end up? Does he get a job? And should we care?
I think we should still care, but there might not be anybody who was hurt more by all the COVID stuff than Newton, right? I mean, maybe you could say Tua, but in the end, Tua landed with the Dolphins, and that's a fine landing spot for him. For Cam, I think teams are just really worried about his injury situation. They want to test him out, and they can't do a workout with him at this point. So the bad news for him is so many of these jobs have been filled now. Could he go to a team like the Jags? I don't know that Jay Gruden would want a guy like Newton. I think Jay Gruden's looking more for someone who can run his system and not somebody like Newton, who's kind of, you know, his own type of quarterback that you could build around. And the Patriots might be his best shot. But when we're looking at those Vegas odds, and they normally have an inside line, and he's quite a bit of a long shot at this point to be the starter for the Patriots. So in my mind right now, he's off the board in fantasy. And it goes back to what we've mentioned a couple times, that there's just so many quarterbacks out there that unless you're talking about a dynasty league where you're going to stash him and see what happens, I'm not really looking at him in redraft leagues this year. And even for dynasty, his value is way, way down to the point where you're not gonna be able to trade him for anything. You're just going to have to hold and hope that maybe there's an injury and he'll be able to sign somewhere and step into a role that way.
Yeah, I unfortunately for him think that's the only path he's going to have to a team this season in the NFL is if somebody has an injury. Now, that could happen as early as OTAs in camp, or it could happen as late as, you know, deep into the season. But I would assume he has to stay NFL ready throughout the next full year to try and get a starting job. And you know that Cam Newton is going to be the guy that has a chip on his shoulder and comes in and wants to prove that A, that he's healthy, and B, that he can still do it, because I think this could be one of the better things for him. It did a lot for Robert Griffin, not his career, obviously, but his attitude about football. And he apparently has been, you know, an absolutely exemplary teammate and mentor for Lamar Jackson. So there definitely is a path for veteran quarterbacks to be helpful. But for me, Cam Newton is not fantasy helpful. So we have one more guy on the list. And this is somebody that I think fell into a very good situation, but I want to also talk about the wide receivers there. So Teddy Bridgewater is now a Carolina Panther. That was a very interesting choice, in my opinion, for them to go with Teddy, but he has a lot of weapons there. Now, they also brought in Matt Rhule's guy in Robbie Anderson. So how does that affect DJ Moore, and is Teddy Bridgewater the guy? Is guess what I'm going to throw to you, Justin?
Well, let's start with DJ Moore, because I absolutely love DJ Moore. I think he's a top 10 receiver, potentially in all formats this year, dynasty, redraft, everything. We saw him produce with really terrible quarterback play with Kyle Allen last year and put up a huge – the only knock on him right now is he's not scoring touchdowns. But you kind of talked at one point during this podcast about how touchdowns can be fairly fluky, especially for receivers. So I think we're going to see some regression in that area for him. The part is Robbie Anderson doesn't really fit with Teddy Bridgewater, but you know who does? DJ Moore. Teddy Bridgewater is like a much more professional, better version of Kyle Allen, a guy who's going to check it down, who wants to play that short to intermediate game, who doesn't want to challenge defenses deep. And he's a guy who can put up some stats. We saw, and it was an absolutely perfect situation with Breeze going down last year and with that Saints team around him. And we kind of talked about that with Jameis and where he's at now. But Bridgewater was a low-end QB1 last season during those five starts. Now, when you look at this offense, he's got great weapons around him. He's got all these guys that are going to be able to excel at exactly what he likes to do, that short to intermediate range with CMC out of the backfield. Hopefully, with Curtis Samuel getting some more short passes, because I think they've been misusing him. They were trying to go deep. They could not connect with him whatsoever. He was getting overthrown constantly. Maybe this coaching staff will be a little smarter. And that's really what this comes down to. Whether we're talking about the Cardinals and Cliff Kingsbury, you know, there's offenses around the league that you want to be a part of. There's coaches you want to be attached to. The Cardinals are one of them. The Panthers are one of them now. When it's not just Matt Rhule, an offensive line guy coming in as the head coach, it's also Joe Brady, formerly of LSU fame last year with Joe Burrow, but also formerly of the Saints. So he has a rapport with Bridgewater already from a couple years ago. That really helps in a year like this, where you're not going to have as much off-season time to prepare, but you do have, you know, a new system coming in and a new quarterback and some new offensive weapons there. So I really like this situation for Bridgewater. I think they need to keep working on that offensive line, but, you know, that's a work in progress. And we've seen teams be able to, you know, kind of scheme around a weak offensive line. And we saw Kyler Murray put up top 10 stats last year, even though the Cardinals line wasn't that great. So I like this for him. I don't really like it for Robbie Anderson, who is a player who I've championed before, but I don't think his skill set really fits here. And I think he might end up getting used a little more just like a field stretcher to clear things out for those other guys to do work underneath.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, I love Robbie Anderson. Rest in peace, Robbie.
Yeah, that sounded so sad.
Oh, man. The fact that, and you know what, I really actually am going to love the Panthers a little bit this year because of Matt Rhule. Lived pretty close to Temple College, and that is a great place to hang out and have some fun. And I'm really excited their football team is churning out some NFL players, and that system got a lot better. So I want to see what Matt Rhule is going to do with that offense. And I think you couldn't have a better running back to support Teddy Bridgewater and Christian McCaffrey. Now they have a tight end, I believe it, Ian Thomas. Is there?
Yep.
Ooh, is he going to be third year or is this his second year?
It's his third year.
Yeah. So is he primed for a third year breakout, or are we going to be looking at a quiet tight end group this season?
He's one of the guys on that list. I think if you don't go with Kittle or Kelsey early, I think you have to wait at tight end this year. There are just so many players down there, whether it's, you know, Hayden Hurst, who we talked about a little bit, whether it's guys like Mike Gesicki or, you know, Ian Thomas or Jonnu Smith, or you can find some vets down there like Eric Ebron. There's just a ton of guys available. I like Chris Herndon as well, who was hurt and suspended last year. There are so many guys down in that range, and he's one of them, probably a little lower down that list. I'd like some of those other names a little more. But there's so many guys, you could grab two of them late in your draft and hope one of them hits. Or honestly, you're probably going to be able to get one or two of them off the waiver wire early in the season when they hit in the first couple weeks. So count him on that list for me, and maybe not somebody that I'm going to be targeting, but I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on.
Greg, who is the Panther, excluding Christian McCaffrey, that you will be owning in more leagues than any other this year?
Probably Curtis Samuel. I was picking him up and buying him elsewhere, everywhere else I could before Robbie Anderson went there, and I'm still buying him because what Justin said about Teddy Bridgewater's game is short, intermediate, not down the field. I completely agree about Robbie Anderson being a field stretcher, being a decoy, allowing things to open up in the middle where Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore thrive. And so I love those two, specifically Curtis Samuel, a lot still.
Yeah, I think the Robbie Anderson hurts Curtis Samuel more than it hurts DJ Moore. And I was a Curtis Samuel truther all last year, and Robbie Anderson going there just really broke my heart because, again, that was one I didn't quite hit on the head, but I thought Curtis Samuel was going to do a little better statistically than he did. And I was hoping this year he's going to clean it up a little bit. And we got a clear separation between wide receiver one, wide receiver two there. But I feel like Bridgewater's a good quarterback. If they can get both of those wide receivers the ball in space, they can do well. So that about wraps it up for us. We have had enough technical issues for a month's worth of podcasts. So, Justin, I want to send it over to you. The floor is yours. Go ahead and plug anything you have upcoming. If you want to just talk about your relationship with Adam Sandler movies or anything that you have on your mind, man, just this is your moment. So I give you the floor.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and you know, keep your head up through all those technical issues. We definitely had a few tonight, but we've had some on our podcast as well, and it doesn't make for a very fun time editing it together after, but we powered through for sure, and hopefully some people got some good information from the show. If anybody's looking for more of my work, they can download the Score app. Like I said before, it's free. All my content is. Check out the NFL Fantasy News section on the Score app. My rankings are in there, redraft, dynasty, rookie ranks, absolutely everything. And there's a ton of content coming. Our breakouts for 2020 went up today. Lots of stuff coming over the next month or so. And then the draft kit will be up in late May. That's the plan right now. So it's an exciting time. And I love coming on, you know, different podcasts like this one with you guys and talking football. And we're very fortunate that we're able to do this, even with all the craziness going on in the world right now. So I appreciate you guys having me on, and I look forward to doing it again.
Justin, it's been a blast having you, man. And I would do it all again, even with all the technical difficulties. But once we get it all put together behind the scenes, I will definitely have it sounding like robots having sex. No, I will have it sounding like a wonderful podcast episode. Greg, anything you want to say to everybody before we get out of here, man?
No, I was going to say I'd really love listening to Justin, what he had to say. A lot of great insight and knowledge there. So I'm glad you came on, and I got to learn a lot too. So thanks for being on. You can follow me at Dino Mechanic on Twitter, and that's where you can find my info.
Yes, your info. You can find my info on Twitter at esorbor1. That's esorbor1, because I am Rob Rose, and that is my name backwards. For all of us at Sleeper Wire, guys, please stay safe out there. Take care of each other, be kind, and have a good week. We will catch you next time.